All right, go ahead and be seated. Thank you. So we've been talking here last several weeks about strengths and weaknesses and increasing and decreasing and giving and taking. And all of this has been talking really about pride and humility. There's things that we have to struggle against as well as things that we need to internalize and encompass in our lives. So we're going to talk about boundaries and limitations. I want to draw to your mind an illustration that you're probably aware of. When God came, or really invited Israel to come to him there on Mount Sinai, there in Exodus chapter 19, Moses was told to put boundaries or bounds all around the mountain so that neither man nor beast could come near the mountain. Those are boundaries there. And it wasn't because the people couldn't pass those boundaries. It was because they shouldn't pass those boundaries. It wasn't that they were unable. It was that it didn't serve their best interest, because there was horrible consequences for crossing those boundaries. Of course, they would be struck dead. But then you have an opposite thing in Exodus 33, verse 20, where Moses says, "Let me see your face," right? I think everyone's had that request at some point or another. God, I want to see you. And God says to him, "You cannot see my face, for no man can see my face and live." Well, there's an inability there. That's a powerlessness. This isn't just something that we could do, but we choose not to. This is something we are prevented from doing. In a nutshell, what I just described is boundaries and limitations. One is a boundary that is put around something that we're not supposed to cross. The other is a limitation, something we cannot do. So there are some things that are not allowed, and there are other things that are not able. Okay? And both of these have to do with pride and humility. Things that we don't do, or should not do, I should say, boundaries, these are tests of our faith. Really what they are is restraints on our human pride. God is saying, don't do this, but do that instead. Don't go here, but stay here instead, that type of thing. And if we prove faithful in honoring and obeying those boundaries, well, then that's a good thing, and good things come to us. But if we succumb to our pride, then that contributes to our ruin, if we go ahead and transgress those boundaries. So things that we're not able to do reveals something else. That reveals an inherent weakness that we have of human ability. Humility accepts those limitations, yields to God's power and grace, and just simply says, there are things I can't do, and I'm good with that. Pride, however, says, oh yeah, watch me, okay? I can do this, or I can at least try to do this here. Pride strives against God's limitations there, and then God's imposed limitations, that is, and then creates this unnecessary conflict. So our lesson deals with boundaries as well as limitations. Often they're referenced together, but they are not the same thing. You know as well as I do, in Galatians chapter 5, verse 22 and 23, Paul says that there's the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, self-control, and all those things. And then at the end of that, he says, against such things there is no law. There is no boundary, there is no limitation. You can do as much of those things as you want to do. And you can do those things to as many people as you want to do them, right? Those are good things to do. But people need moral boundaries, and we also need to acknowledge our limitations in order to keep us on the right path, the narrow path that leads to life. The wide path accepts everything. No boundaries, no limitations, so to speak. But the narrow path, there are things we need to observe. And those things come to us from God, because he knows us better than we know ourselves. He is the creator, after all. We didn't create God. God created us. We should always keep it in that order, right? That God created us, and he knows what is best for us. So it's not enough for us to be told that we need to be humble. We also need to respect the danger of human pride. And as we talked about last week, that will be the cause of death of you, the cause of death of your spiritual soul, if you don't listen to that message, if you don't listen to those warnings that God has given to each one of us. So when we talk about boundaries, what we're really dealing with here is what we choose to obey or not obey. A limitation, however, is something that is chosen for us. So boundaries are things we are expected to honor. Limitations are things that we cannot do. Again, these things work together, of course, but they aren't the same thing, as you can see. A boundary is basically, when we recognize it, that is, it's our way of saying to God, I must not go that way or that far or that direction or that lifestyle. That contradicts or compromises my commitment that I made to Christ. So God has placed these boundaries around our life, and we recognize that. We're okay with that. At least if we're faithful to God, then we accept that and we're okay with that. It's God's truth, however, that dictates where those boundaries are to be placed. And anything that exceeds that boundary is therefore exceeding God's truth. And whenever we exceed God's truth, what do we call that? We call that a lie. So when we get into a lying situation, it's not just telling something that's untrue, it's also going somewhere that you shouldn't go. It's also exceeding where you should have gone, exceeding those boundaries that God has placed for us. The Bible uses the word trespasses and transgressions, and that's really where those words apply here. If you think about trespassing, you're going somewhere you're not supposed to go. And when you're transgressing, you're going beyond somewhere that you should have gone, okay? So I'm sure every one of us have probably, as a kid, we probably trespassed across someone's property. I remember when I was a kid, living in Des Moines way back when, I'm going back 15 years at least, there was a big apple tree that was just inside the neighbor's yard, and we couldn't reach it from the sidewalk, so we'd have to, trespass onto the property in order to get those apples. Not that he cared any, but still, the idea is still stuck in my mind of going somewhere where I had no permission to go. It wasn't that I was unable to go there, I just wasn't supposed to, and that's the whole idea about boundaries. There's a biblical example here in 2 John verse 9 where John says, anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teachings of Christ does not have God. So he uses the very language that we're using right now. Anyone who goes beyond where he should have gone beyond the truth of what God has revealed, now goes too far and therefore does not have God. So what does that person become? Well, a liar. He didn't have to say a lie, overtly, but he's lying by the very fact that he's gone too far. That in itself is a lie. So just because boundaries are determined, it's our responsibility to observe them and respect them. Just like Israel was taught to observe and respect the boundaries that Moses placed around Mount Sinai. Okay, so here's an example. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10, Paul says, the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have done what? Gone beyond what they should have done. Money's not evil in itself, right? The root of all evil is not money itself. It's the love for money. And when we pursue that love of money, which is beyond the boundaries of what money is to be used for, now what have we done? Well, now we have wandered away. We have transgressed. We've gone beyond, and we now live a lie, is really what Paul is saying in so many words if we make the application of our lesson here. 1 Corinthians 10:13, we all know this verse, no temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but always provides a way of escape. I'll come back to that in a later lesson. Well, this only applies to those who are going to live faithful to the covenant with God. It doesn't mean that you can't go beyond. It means that God doesn't want you to and provides a way of escape so that you don't have to go beyond. Now, you could choose to go beyond. All of us have done this, right? At some point, all of us went beyond. The temptation was there. God provided a way of escape over there, and we decided to go beyond the temptation into sin, and then what did we do? We lied against what we said we believed. We became liars. So I want you to put those things together in your mind instead of just looking at going on boundary like, oh, it's not such a big deal. To God, it's a super big deal. It's a very big deal because it ruins the relationship that you have with him. So what does pride say in response to this? You know what it says because, well, we're human beings. We've exercised our pride. Pride says that boundaries are oppressive and they're restrictive. They cramp my style. And, of course, they're a sign of weakness. Only weak people use boundaries. I mean, it's just, you know how it is. And so this follows the carnal, the sensual, the emotional impulses that we have as people. And it's pride, really, that always wants to test the limits, right? Always wants to test. I'm sorry, but when I was writing this lesson, I was thinking of Jurassic Park, where Tyrannosaurus Rex, T-Rex, was testing the fence all the time. Remember that? And then one time the fence wasn't shocking him, and what did he do? He tore it down, just went beyond that. And I think that's what pride is doing, is testing the fence all the time, testing to see where the weaknesses are. Always testing, always testing. What is the testing to do? How far can I get from Christ, and how close can I get to sin? That's what pride always wants. Don't tell me you haven't done this yourself, because I'm pretty sure that you have. And I know this because you're human. This is what pride does. This is what human pride does. And anyone who has sinned has done exactly what I just said. The truth is, it requires far more maturity and discipline to set boundaries and live by them than it does to live without them. It is fashionable, it is a popular thing to adopt a no-rules lifestyle. But that is the path of least resistance, and that leads to ruin and destruction. What are we seeing in our society right now? We're seeing a bunch of people we call anarchists, which means literally no law people, okay? They're people without laws, people without boundaries, and that always works out well, right? Just as I mentioned in class this morning, we're seeing burning buildings and people suffering and, you know, broken windows and cop cars burning up. And so what are we seeing here? When we have no laws, we have no rules, we have no boundaries, people suffer, destruction happens, people's lives are ruined. Well, spiritually, it's the same exact way. You want to live with no rules? That's your choice. But I'm telling you, the consequences of that is more than you realize. It will be more than you can even imagine right now if you continue on that course. So what we're really talking about here is stewardship or management of your life. God gives directions, and we implement those directions, and we apply those directions. God writes the program. We execute the program. God provides the full armor of God, and we are responsible for putting it on. God provides the new self, and we're responsible for living out that new self. And that's what our part in all that is. God provides, but we have to carry it out. Well, you know that Jeremiah 10:23 says, I know that a man's way is not in himself, nor is it in a man who walks to direct his steps. Well, that's just so true. I think life has borne that out many, many times, right? That we think we know the way, but we really don't. And I'm not saying we're a bunch of idiots here. I'm saying that we're human. And therefore we're limited to human finite understanding. I am as well as you are. I am as much as you are. Pride, however, says, I know, I know, I know. If you ever talk to someone and that's what they respond to all the time, you're trying to instruct them and they're like, I know, I know, I know. If you've ever had teenagers, you know what I'm talking about. I can handle it. I can figure it out. And yet the fact is we need boundaries. Boundaries are a good thing. Don't look at boundaries as a bad thing if they're keeping us safe with God and keeping us away from danger. What that means then is you need to have boundaries about what you think about. I'm going to be in Ephesians for a few of these verses. If you want to turn there, start with Ephesians chapter 5, verse 3 through 5, where Paul says, immorality or any impurity or greed must not be named among you. Doesn't mean it can't be. It just must not be. It's a boundary, as is proper among saints. And there must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know with certainty, that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater, because that's what all those things represent, has an inheritance in the kingdom of God, of Christ in God. So there are some evil things that we're not supposed to think about, which is all of them, okay? There's a lot of evil in the world, and we're not supposed to be dwelling on those. We can't have holy fellowship and intimacy with a holy God when we're dwelling on impure, evil things. We can stray, of course. We can think about those things. It's not that you're unable, but that you shouldn't do those things. What about where you go or who you associate with? Well, Christians are free to make choices, right? But we're not free to live as we please if indeed we profess to serve Jesus Christ. That profession necessarily demands that we adhere to the boundaries that he places upon us, that we live within those boundaries. 1 Corinthians 15:33, you all know that verse. It says, bad company corrupts good morals. Well, if that is true, and you believe it to be true, then that means you must not rub shoulders with bad company. And people, when they say stuff like, well, I'm strong enough, this person won't affect me, this relationship won't affect me, you have to understand that what you're doing there is you're testing the boundary. You're actually saying, how close can I get to something I know will destroy me? How close can I get? You know, if there's a toxic relationship in your life or someone constantly telling you to do something that is wrong, I know young people especially struggle with this because they're trying to find out their peers. You know, if you've chosen peers that are bad peers and they're constantly testing you and trying to get you to do evil, you really should get rid of those friends. You don't need that in your life. Because once in a while, they may prevail, and you may listen to them instead of listening to God. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 6, Paul says, let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things, the empty words, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. So what he's really saying here, as I understand it, is don't let the sons of disobedience lead you to where you ought not to go and where you ought not to think. Because, it makes sense, they have no regard for what is holy. And they do not seek your best interest. And quite frankly, they do not care about your soul. You know, the one thing about the church that I can say, at least I'm saying this ideally anyway, I can't make it statistically 100% true, but ideally is that the church is filled with people who actually care about your soul. The world out there does not care about your soul. I'm not saying it doesn't care about you at all. I'm saying it doesn't care about the most important part of you. Whereas God does, and most Christians do too. What do you want to hang around with? What do you want to fill your life with? You should fill your life with people who care about your soul. Well, we also should think about how we ought to live there. How we ought to live in the sense of you know, how our conduct ought to be in our behavior. The proud people live as they please, at least that's what they claim, but the Christian, the faithful Christian, will live as God pleases. And we read that verse here, or Matthew read that for us in 1 John 2:6 this morning. The one who says he abides in him ought to himself to walk in the same manner as he, meaning Christ, walked. That doesn't apply to just some Christians, that should define all Christians. Now, does it apply to you? Yes, it does apply to you, but are you doing it? Well, that's between you and God right now, not me and you, but between you and God. But the point is this what you committed to if you're in Christ? Those who live in contradiction to what they profess to believe are called hypocrites, and you can't be hypocritical and humble all at the same time. So our objective then is to strive for humility, not to strive for how close can we get to the world or how far can we get from Christ. Once again, not testing the limits there. We should also think about how we are to respond to people and peer pressure, because every one of us is really being bombarded by peer pressure all the time, whether we realize it or not. Think about what Peter says in 1 Peter 4, verse 3 and 4. He says, the time already passed is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles. And when you don't follow them, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and they malign you. Dissipation is like wasteful living, and maligning is like distorting and corrupting and you know, destroying your character. This is what they do. If they can't change your ways, they'll destroy your reputation. They'll destroy you personally because you're not running with them. You will be pressured. If you're a faithful Christian, you will be pressured by those outside of Christ to do what non-Christians do. You're going to have to make a decision there. Just because someone invites you to compromise your faith or your values or your conscience doesn't mean you have to consent. Here's some short advice from Proverbs 1, verse 10 and 15. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path. And there's a whole book there that deals with separating the good from the evil, the righteous from the unrighteous, and the wise from the foolish. So what do you have to do? Well, you have to make decisions. You have to know what the right decision is to make in the first place, and then make that decision for yourself. You don't have to listen, you don't have to agree, you don't have to go where unrighteous people go. Just because someone demands an answer of you doesn't mean you have to answer. I think of Jesus at his trial, how often he was silent before his accusers. Why? Because the argument was useless, and the accusers had their mind made up already. And by sitting there and arguing wasn't going to change anything one bit, and he knew that. You may be put in that same situation. I'm thinking of social media, for example. You know, when someone's out there and they're just out there for blood. You know what I'm talking about. They're out there to argue. Their mind is already made up, and then you comment and say something that contradicts or forces them to question, and they just go after you with venom. You know what I'm talking about. Maybe you should have just been quiet. Maybe it just wasn't worth it. Some battles aren't worth fighting. If someone keeps repeatedly asking you for money and time and help, you do have the right to say no. You don't have to be an enabler. You don't have to contribute to their irresponsibility. Ephesians 5, verse 17, it says here, the verse we've quoted many times, "So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is." Because every Christian has a moral responsibility to learn and understand and abide by the will of the Lord. That's not just for preachers and teachers and certain select people that have been in the church for a long time. This is for everyone. Spiritual wisdom is not just knowing what you should think or should do, but also what you should not think and what you should not do. Self-control, recall, is a fruit of the Spirit. So that's really what we're talking about, is self-management and stewardship. Well, the reason for boundaries is because if there weren't any, then you would be endangered all the time, or that you might be taken to the point of no return. They are given then in your best interest. And because all of us have inherent human weaknesses, we can be tempted beyond our ability to say no. We can be tempted into a place, so to speak, where we are overwhelmed with evil. The boundaries are there to protect us from going that far. You recall in the garden that the serpent said to Eve that if you eat this fruit, you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Well, that's a half-truth. Because obviously, that is true on the surface, what the serpent said. What he didn't tell her was that you won't have the divine ability to either control or apply that knowledge once you have it. There's the lie that was withheld, the information that was withheld from Eve. So she based her decision on half-truth, didn't get the full story, didn't get all the truth. And you should know that half-truth is no different than a lie, right? When you're not giving someone the full story, when that's what they need and serves their best interest. So here we have once again the way of escape. Back to 1 Corinthians 10:13. God provides this way or this route to deal with the limitations of our human ability. Suppose you're on a edge of a cliff there, and there's a sign that says cliff edge, like you see in the photo here, okay, or warning, you know, unstable cliff, or hey, don't be stupid, don't get so close to the edge, you know, something along that nature, right? Why are those signs there? Well, for one thing, there's danger involved. For another thing, people probably got too close to the edge in the past and fell off. And so there's reasons for these signs. The sign says stay away from the edge. The sign is a boundary to save you from the limitation. If you want to put these things together, this is how they work together. The boundary is you can get too close to the edge, but don't do that. The boundary is there to save you from your limitation. You say, well, what's the limitation? Here it is. You can't fly. Right? Because if you could, the sign becomes useless. If you could fly, then you could just get near that edge of the cliff and then you just start flying. And you wouldn't fall, no one would get hurt. The fact is, since you cannot overcome gravity, since you cannot fly, the boundary is there to protect you from what you're limited in. And if you think about that in a spiritual way, that's exactly what God is doing. He's saying, don't get too close or don't go too far away. It's like, but I can. And God says, yeah, you can, but there are limitations beyond that that you will suffer from if you don't listen to me. God's word is prescribing boundaries to save us from limitations. When we go beyond the boundaries, we destroy ourselves. And if you keep going beyond the boundaries or keep, failing to honor those boundaries, well, there's this frightening passage in Hebrews 10, 26 and 27. It says, if we go on sinning willfully, which is another way of saying we keep purposely and willfully going beyond that boundary, disregarding the boundary, after receiving that knowledge of the boundary, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but only a terrifying judgment. I don't know when that line is crossed exactly. All I know is the line is there. And it can be crossed. So keep trespassing the boundaries, then you will exceed the limit of divine grace. Because divine grace, no one wants to hear this, but the fact is, divine grace is conditional. And if you fail to meet the conditions over and over repeatedly, that means you really don't believe in divine grace. Why would God save anyone who doesn't believe in divine grace? Pride says, well, I don't like God telling me what to do and what I can't do and where I can't go. I prefer to be in control. That's what pride always says, right? Here's the fact. There are things you can't do, and there are many things you can't control. And God didn't have to tell you all that, but because he loves you, he does tell you that. Remember, love does no harm. Love always seeks the best interest. What is your best interest that will not harm you is to put boundaries away around you to keep you from killing yourself, and destroying yourself, ruining your soul. And in humility, what we do is we confess, I'm a moral human being. I am finite. I am susceptible to failure. I am susceptible to being deceived by sinister forces of wickedness that are far more powerful than I am. I am limited in my ability. Basically, I am not, I am invincible, or not invincible, rather, is what I want to say. I am not invincible, okay? This is where brain goes faster than mouth can keep up with, okay? So with that, there's some things that you want to think about. There's some things that you cannot do that you may not have thought about until this lesson, but here they are. You can't burn the candle at both ends to have it all, because quite frankly, you can't have it all. Not only can you not have it all, you don't need to have it all. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9, Paul is told by God, my grace is sufficient for you. Proud people always resist that, unnecessarily striving and kicking against the goads. The humble person accepts that and is content with that and says, Lord, your will be done. If your grace is sufficient for me, then your grace is all I need. Well, where are you at with that? You can't be everyone's friend, even in the church. I've been around for a while. I've been in the church for a long time. And I can tell you that you can't be everyone's friend. And not everyone is going to be your friend, even in the church. The more you stand up for righteousness, the more resistance you are going to face. The more you speak up for what is true, the more you become a target of criticism. And the more that you stand in a leadership role, and this goes beyond the church, in family, in the church, in civic responsibilities, even at work, the more you stand up in a leadership role, the more vulnerable you are to attacks. It's just the way it is. You can't escape that. You can't control people's minds or their decisions or their lives or their loves. Many people spend a great deal of time and effort trying to persuade and control and manipulate people to conform to their own way. Even if that way is, as they think, good, they can't make it happen. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, is basically the premise here. So Jesus himself never tried to control people. He only provided opportunity for people. Here is the opportunity. You either accept it or you reject it. That's yours to do, but I'm not going to coerce you. And that's a good message for us. You can't follow two masters at once. This isn't always clicking through. That's why I'm falling behind here. You can't always serve two, or you can't serve two masters at once. Matthew 6:24 says that. Pride pretends to divide allegiance equally between God and the world so that you can get the best of both. I think there's a lot of Christians who are trying to straddle that fence right now. I can walk in the world with my friends, my worldly friends, and then on Sunday and other times when needed, I can walk as a Christian and I can actually do both at the same time. Jesus says you can't. And so when we start trying to do things that God says that we can't do, we make God out to be a liar, but we also lie to ourselves. And that's a bad place to be. Humility chooses Christ over the world because we've died with Christ, and therefore we've died to the world. So in humility, we make a choice. You can't be in heaven if you refuse to be holy. That was the essence of our message this morning in our class. Just don't kid yourself. Don't anyone who's listening to this kid yourself. You cannot be in heaven if you refuse to be holy. If you refuse to be obedient in that holiness, because no one can be holy who is disobedient. Whatever that means, whatever that takes, is what you need to do. The idea of a casual disciple or a casual churchgoer, someone who's just loosely or intermittently involved, is foreign to the scriptures. Pride deceives us in thinking that we can be that way. Humility accepts that whatever I need to do is what must be done. Once again, which one are you? You answer that for yourself. God is not asking you to be obedient to make you miserable, but because he loves you and he doesn't want to lose you. That's why you need to be obedient. It serves your best interest. We looked at this passage this morning in our class, Revelation 22, 14 and 15, where it talks about those who will be with God in the city of God, and then those who will be outside of that city. Translation, we could sum up that verse very succinctly and say, blessed are the humble, but the proud remain outside. It's really what that comes down to. Because in order to be holy and blameless and have your robes washed in the blood of Christ and so on, you have to be humble. There's no way to do that otherwise. You can be disqualified even after a good start. 1 Corinthians 9:27, that's what Paul says. After I've preached the gospel to many, I myself might be disqualified if I don't do what needs to be done. Don't think that you or I are exempt from this. It doesn't matter how long you've been a Christian. It doesn't matter how many Christians are in your pedigree, right? Because I get people telling me that sometime. Well, my grandpappy and, you know, his grandpappy and so on, back 15 different generations, they were all Christians. And I'm like, what does that mean? That doesn't mean that you're a Christian, a faithful one at all. In fact, it doesn't even guarantee that they were. We're just using names now and statuses to justify things. Doesn't mean anything at all. Just because you attend a sound congregation doesn't make you sound. Salvation isn't dependent on any of those things that we just talked about. Pride deceives us into thinking that it does, but humility seeks to draw near to God and stay near to God. That's what humility does. You can't have a perfect marriage. You can't have flawless children. You can't always be right. You can't force people to believe in the gospel. You can't save the world. You can't be saved if you're following the path of least resistance. And if you're unwilling to deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow Christ, well, then you cannot be his disciple. There are limitations. And it would be good for you to know what those limitations are. There are some things that have to be. There are other things that cannot be, and you need to know those things. I don't mean need to know as in we're going to test you on this later. I mean need to know for your own protection and also for the accuracy of the message you give to others. You are free to make your own decisions, of course, but you're not free to exceed divinely imposed limitations upon the human condition. Remember, you are not the one who made God. But it's God, the Creator, who made you. He has the right, he has the authority, he has the prerogative to place limits upon his creation in whatever way he chooses. And God never asked you to do the impossible. But sometimes we set out to do the impossible anyway, don't we? Like when Jesus says, you can't serve two masters, it's like, oh yeah, hold my coffee, watch this, you know, and then we set out to, to do that sort of thing. It's like, no, we're trying to do the impossible there. We can't do that. Why would we do that when it really results in our own hurt and our own ruin? At the same time, just because there are limitations, that doesn't mean a license to do little or nothing. Like, well, since I'm so limited, I don't really have to be accountable to much. Well, that's not true. If God has given you responsibilities, you're expected to take care of them. Otherwise, you're being irresponsible, which means you're being proud and arrogant rather than humble and submissive. We're not looking for loopholes and exemptions. What we really should be looking for is how can we be more effective, more realistic disciples of the Lord Himself. Jesus isn't asking you to lay down your cross. What He's saying to you, in essence, is you can't bear your cross alone. Those are two very different things. You do have a cross to bear, but you can't do it by yourself. You do have responsibilities to fulfill. But you can't do everything that is necessary to save you. Take care of what God has given you to do. Let Him take care of the rest. All will be well. Like Jesus said, do this and you will live. Remember that passage there in 1 Corinthians 10:12. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed that he does not fall. The fact is, you can fall. None of us are immune to that, to not falling, that is. Pay attention to the boundaries so that you avoid succumbing to the limitation. Well, God gives us knowledge of the Word to help us. We show wisdom when we study and apply that Word and we seek His will instead of our own. Admitting that we have weaknesses doesn't make us weak people. It just forces us to rechannel our direction of where we're seeking our strength. In fact, by admitting that we are weak and relying on God's strength actually makes us stronger than people who refuse to admit that they're weak. If you think about it, a little paradox going on there. And placing boundaries on what we think and say and how we live and the associations we have doesn't make our life more restrictive and oppressive. It actually makes our life better. It makes us able to serve Christ more responsibly. And allows us to serve one another that way as well. Realizing our limitations doesn't make us incapable of doing anything. It just refocuses our attention and our effort on what can be done and what we ought to be doing. Instead of wasting our time and effort on pursuing things that can't be done and then suffering the consequences of that. Why would you do that? Be smart about this. The gospel is a gospel of that appeals to our intelligence. It's a reasonable gospel. I don't mean that it's all about human reason. What I'm saying is it's reasonable and sound and sensible to believe in something this intelligent that came from an intelligent being who gave us life. That just makes sense. We ought to be proud of Jesus Christ, and we ought to be proud that we are His disciples. And yet, in that, we must hate whatever is satanic and self-serving and of human pride. Because whatever God loves is what we must love as well. And so with whatever God hates. God is opposed to the proud, but He gives grace to the humble. And part of being humble is recognizing, as we discussed in our lesson here, the boundaries and limitations that God has placed upon us for good reason. And the lesson, as we say, is yours. In fact, the whole series is yours because this ends my series on pride and humility, at least for now. And as you know, I'm going to take a little break from speaking. So as my final word for next several weeks is this right here. I hope that what we have covered has done you well. It was intended to. And I hope that what you have heard also, if you were to implement it all, is something that would help your spiritual well-being, not because I said it, but because all of it has been taken out of the Word of God. This is really not Chad speaking to you. This is God speaking to all of us, myself included. I hope you take it seriously. I hope that good comes from all of this, And as you see on the screen, what we should be striving to do is walk by the Spirit and not by the flesh. Walk in humility, not walk as proud and arrogant people. Walk as Christians ought to walk, and not as the world. That's my endeavor here, myself personally, and that's my message to you. If there's anyone that needs to respond and come forward, this will be your time to do so as we stand and sing a song Aaron has selected for us.